3:35. Good afternoon. We're on the air now with Community Affairs at KDUZ and brought to you by Maytag Laundry, Tanning, and Car Wash. Two locations right here in Hutchinson. Today we welcome back Greg Urban. Greg is president of the Crow River Area Amateur Radio Club. And all radio, not only amateur radio, but you did some commercial too many moons ago.
About 40 years ago. I don't want to talk about it.
And joined by Dave Fisher, Dave's emergency coordinator, except for Skywarn. And Dave also serves on the technical committee. Dave, welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jim.
Good having you on the air here. We had you on about, a month or 6 weeks ago,
About six weeks ago. And thank you for very much for having us back.
Yeah, it's nice to kind of be in touch with you guys. You do so many great things for the community. And we just came off or just about done with Severe Weather Awareness Week. And you guys partook in that, too. Why don't you explain what you do? I know you were involved in the Tornado Awareness Day yesterday, but what about the rest of the week?
Well, the rest of the week, the National Weather Service has different activities that they do, and they talk about flooding and so on, and they send out emails and advisories. Okay. Mm-hmm. To us, and we get those emails and go through those, and we promulgate those to our members. The big thing for us is the tornado awareness drills that we do on Thursdays. And yesterday we had two tornado awareness drills, mm-hmm. And one was at 1:55, and the other one was at 6:55 in the evening. And at that time, basically what we do is we get on the amateur radio, on the local repeaters, and we actually take a muster of the number of Skywarn spotters that we could put out in the area at any one given time. So basically what we wind up doing is we'll take a muster and see how many spotters that we mm-hmm. have that check in, which is a good thing for us because it allows us to report to the National Weather Service that we could put 5, 6, 10, 12, 14 people into the field at any given time.
Do you have spotters that belong to the your club?
Yes. In fact, just about all of our spotters belong to the club, are full-time members mm-hmm. of the club. We also have spotters up in Meeker County. There's a club up there, and mm-hmm. a lot of those members hold dual membership in both right. clubs. And a lot of our members here hold membership mm-hmm. up there. So it's kind of a cooperative effort between the two clubs, because we cover such a huge area mm-hmm. as the Crow River Club. We cover all the way down into Sibley County and all the way up into Meeker County, mm-hmm. portions of Wright County, southern portions of Wright County, and
sure.
east mm-hmm. of Renville. So we cover a big area.
Now let's talk to Dave a second or two here. Dave, you're the emergency coordinator. What is it that you do with the club? You kind of arrange for guys to go out and cover in the event of severe weather, or what do you do?
Well, actually, I'm the ARES Emergency Coordinator. ARES is the Amateur Radio Emergency Service, and it's a nationwide organization made up of ham radio operators. Mm-hmm. And what we do is provide support to relief agencies or public safety agencies in the event of some sort of wide-scale disaster. So my role in that is I'm the coordinator for McLeod County. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I'm the point person. So say some sort of disaster happens here, the county emergency management director, if they need our support, would contact me. I in turn have my own roster of people. I know what their capabilities are, and I put people where they need mm-hmm. people to communicate.
How many do you have on that standby roster? I don't, and all you guys must have regular jobs during the week.
Oh yeah.
You know, so where do you come up with these people if you really are in a situation where you have to get going with your club in an emergency?
Well, we hope that a lot of them kind of have agreements with their employers if they're able to leave during the day.
A lot like the fire department.
Yep.
Yeah, same thing.
I've got probably about 10 people on my list. If we need more people than that, I go to neighboring county ECs and ask for assistance. So there's kind of a mutual aid agreement there.
Have you ever had to activate this group of people under your command there, Dave?
No.
Never
well,
have.
Not while Dave was our coordinator. However, we did have, when they had the St. Peter tornado about 10 years ago, mm-hmm. that one, they had people down there for about a week from this club helping out. And I'm trying to remember how many was down there. I think it was three. I think it was Doug and Roger and Don were down there for about a week working that mm-hmm. tornado. And we've also had a person that went down to Hurricane Katrina and spent 2 weeks down there working that.
And I believe last time you were on the air, Greg, you were talking about When the bridge collapsed out of the city is here last year or the year before, time goes so quickly. But you guys were, I don't know if any members of your club were called down there to help, but they had the ham clubs down there too, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And we weren't called in, fortunately. We didn't have to get called in. However, the Twin Cities FM Club was called in, and they had an emergency trailer set up down there that actually assisted. I believe FM clubs assisted the Salvation Army. Do you remember who it was that assisted the Red Cross? There was another organization. I think it was CMARC or something like that, which is Southeast Metro Amateur Radio Club or something like that.
How many members, I don't even know if you know this, more likely you, Greg Wood, or maybe Dave knows, but as far as members statewide in ham radio?
I don't know statewide, but I know nationwide, it's about 600,000 amateur radio operators in this country, and that's growing.
I think I maybe heard of maybe around 11,000 in the state. I'm not, you know, don't quote me on that, but it sounds about right.
So, you know, it's a hobby where, you know, it's kind of a hobby, isn't it? Would you classify it as a hobby or
it's
not?
It's classified as a hobby.
Okay, so, you know, you have to have the latest equipment. Do you approach the better half and say, well, you know, this is kind of getting old and worn out. I need something new and state-of-the-art. Do you have any issues that way? You know, or not.
Well, you don't necessarily need new equipment. I mean, you know, you could have a 20-year-old radio that would do just as well. It's just
There's always something new to buy, though, isn't there, Dave, being that you're in the technical committee?
Oh, yeah, there's always bells and whistles.
Sure.
But they're pretty much just that a lot of the times.
Yeah.
One of the things that we're trying to do is we're trying to buy some equipment and get equipment into the Hutchinson Hospital. We're working on getting a station set up there that does both voice and digital mode of communication.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so we're working on getting fundraisers set up. We're going to be doing some hot dog sales at one of the local retailers or one of the local businesses.
You'd have Big Don cooking the hot dogs or what?
Well, I don't know. If he shows up, I'm going to put him on the grill. I'll
sure,
tell
that's
you
right.
That. I'll be out there hawking sliders and rollers.
So, you know, we've heard of, at least for me anyway, I've heard of ham radio a number of years, but how do they come up with the word ham? Yeah, in radio.
Well, actually, nobody really, really knows. However, it comes out with the, I think it comes to do with the abbreviations that the FCC or that the government actually started going with. And originally it was HA, and the designation for a ham license is still HA. And so if you look on the website on the FCC and you look at my call sign on there, you'll see that behind my FRN, which is your federal registration number, is HA. And that stands for home amateur. And they say that that's how it grew out of that. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not, but that's one of the stories.
Now, each one that belongs and passes a test is given call signs, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so what is your call sign, Greg?
My call sign is Kilo Golf Zero Uniform, or KG0U.
Okay.
And that call sign is assigned to me as a person, just like Dave's call sign is assigned to him. He's KB0WJP. Now, you'll notice that his call sign has
a bit longer,
letters.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the reason for that is that I hold an extra class license, and the higher license that you hold, the fewer call letters that you have to have in your call sign, which stems back from the days when we used to use Morse code, and it was one of the privilege to get where you could send only four letters,
less letters,
but now it doesn't really matter so much.
Well, how many licenses are available through the ham radio? You know, when you get your a license, there's got to be more than one, like the FCC, you got the third, the second, and first.
Right, and that's basically what it is in ham. You have a technician class license, which is the first license you get, and then you have the general class license, and that's a little tougher to get, and that allows you to have high-frequency privileges, which is where you can talk all over the world, and then if you really want to go after it, you can get the extra class license, which is the highest class license, and that gives you the full spectrum of frequencies to use.
Not everyone can go out and buy ham radio and talk, can you?
No, you must have a license in order to be able to purchase and utilize ham radio equipment, and the fines are quite heavy if you get caught using amateur radio equipment illegally.
And what about getting on the zero procedure? You know, like on radio, you have to give an official ID. once an hour. KDUZ Hutchinson, nothing in between. Right. What about ham radio?
Maybe? Amateur radio, you have to give your call sign once every 10 minutes, and then at the end of your transmission. So let's say, for example, Dave and I are carrying on a call sign or a conversation.
Sure.
At the end of the transmission, I'll say something such as, this is KG0UQRT. Now, QRT is the old Q codes.
The old end, yep.
Yep, and that means end of transmission. And Dave will come back and he'll say, 73, this is KB0WJP, QRT, or whatever, or clear.
I remember we used QRT in the military, too, the ending of it.
Right.
You know, the end of whatever it was we were doing, QRT is the end of it.
Yeah. Ham radio uses the Q codes, but it's a little different in ham radio than the military. Some of the codes are a little bit different, but it's nothing too difficult to learn.
Yeah.
Hey, if I can learn it, anybody can.
Those Q codes are mainly meant for Morse code, too, but they do spill over when the people are talking on the radio, too.
Okay. So QRT, what does that mean? Do we know?
It's...
end of transmission.
Yeah, but
means I'm done
just
talking. I'm
okay.
Shutting off.
But the QRT, does that mean Quebec? What is it?
Quebec Romeo Tango.
Yeah, no, but nothing.
It's not an abbreviation for anything. They
it's not abbreviation. They just picked that QRT. Hmm. That was what they used to use in Morse code to mean I'm shutting down the transmitter.
Okay, yeah, because we did that when I was in the military working in communications. Greg Urban, president of Crow River Area Radio Amateur Club, and Dave Fisher joining us this afternoon. We're going to come back and talk with Dave on the technical side of it. You're on the technical committee, right?
That's correct.
And we'll talk to Greg more when we continue right here on Community Affairs at KDUZ. Overcast 37 degrees. We're back on the air. Community Affairs at KDUZ. Greg Urban joining us along with Dave Fisher, both members of the Crow River Amateur Radio Club. How many, Dave, how many members do you have in your club?
I think there's around almost 30.
Yeah, 30, 35. Okay. We're growing little bit by little bit. Mm-hmm. And
are you looking for members, new members?
All the time.
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's easy to get your ham radio license. We have members in our club that do nothing but train people. I'm one of those people.
Okay.
They can certainly call me at area code 320-587-6028. If they don't get me, leave a message on my answering machine. Mm-hmm. I will certainly call them back. I can get them set up where they can get classes. We've had people get their license in as little as a week, and some people have taken as much as a year and a half.
Do you still have to pass Morse code?
No, there is no
Morse
code.
Because I remember a few years ago, you used to have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did away with that a year ago in February, and I think that was probably one of the better things they did for amateur radio, because Morse code is only a mode of communications.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like using single sideband or AM or FM. It's just a mode of communications. It does require a certain degree of skill, but it's not the end all.
Now we have, correct me if I'm wrong, but a repeater in town here that sends off Morse code because I can pick up something around here.
Right. And what that repeater is doing, it's actually sending out Dave's call sign.
Yep.
If you know Morse code, it says KB0WJP when it sends out the call sign because he is the repeater trustee for the repeater in Hutchinson.
Okay, so let's just stop you there. What is a repeater for folks that don't know? Dave, maybe you want to do that or whatever.
Yeah, Dave, you can explain that.
Well, a repeater basically is it's a radio that receives and retransmits what it hears, and you typically put them up in a high location. So, you know, say I'm on the ground, I've got a little handheld. If I can reach that repeater, then anybody far away that can reach the repeater can hear me. Where otherwise,
show them your handheld.
They wouldn't be able to. Yeah, here's an example. Just a small, portable radio. So, and, you know, let's say there's somebody, say up in Delano, they can reach the repeater from their house. Whereas normally they would never be able to hear me. They wouldn't have a chance of hearing me. But since I can also get into the repeater, then we can talk. It just connects multiple people.
I believe, Greg, the last time we were in here, you were talking about modifying or getting a new repeater or something to that
effect. Right, and we do now have on the air a real blowtorch of a repeater.
Okay.
We got a new repeater and a new antenna that matches the repeater donated to us by Hutchinson Technology.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm.
And we've just put it on the air just within the last month. And that repeater is working absolutely fantastic, and it really helps us out in our Skywarn operations because we can now talk in the clear mobile to repeater from Highway 101 and Highway 7.
Wow.
So that's a long distance. That's about 45, 50 miles.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a second or talk about something, Spoken Hub, and who wants to take that?
Well,
then we're going to talk to Dave about his technical end of it, too.
Right.
Go ahead.
The Spoken Hub system is basically how we report into the National Weather Service for Skywarn. And basically what we do is we use the Hutchinson repeater here to take reports from our Skywarn spotters in the field. Then we take and have another radio, and if you'll notice, we have our command center for Skywarn down in your basement here at KDUZ, and we have two radios down there. And one radio is tuned to the local repeater here, and the other radio is tuned to the Becker repeater up in Becker, Minnesota. They have a 600-foot smokestack there, and they have a repeater on that smokestack, and that's the repeater that we call into to get to the National Weather Service. One of the reasons that we needed to get a new repeater here was primarily for getting better communications to the area. There's other things we do, such as pandemic drills and so on, and Dave will talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. But basically, one of the reasons we got a new repeater here was so that we could get into the National Weather Service in Chanhassen in the clear. And while I'm talking about the National Weather Service, I do want to remind everybody out there, one of the best investments that you can make nowadays is a NOAA weather radio. Those alerts come over that NOAA weather radio, and I'm going to give you a couple of frequencies here for those of you that have it out there. The Norwood Young America weather station or frequency is 162.425 megahertz. And you don't need anything special to listen to that other than just a normal scanner or a weather radio. And they send out tones that will actually warn you for your area, and that's the one that is actually for this area.
And, you know, you're talking about those tones. That works here at the radio station, too, because if there's a tornado warning, whatever the case may be, some kind of a weather alert, they will code into our TFT EAS unit and go on the air automatically with it.
Right.
So that's a nice service they provide.
One of the reasons the National Weather Service loves us so much for reporting of tornadoes and weather in this area is the fact that one of our spotters on the ground sees something, and generally within less than 2 minutes, they have the report there at Chanhassen at the National Weather Service of what event is occurring. So let's say we have somebody out west of Hutchinson, 15 miles west of Hutchinson, and they see quarter-size hail. That person calls that in to us. We call it into the National Weather Service. It generally takes less than a minute, but in less than 2 minutes, they've got the report of hail. They know what's going on the ground, and their radar can't see that.
What about, you know, I know that you guys come in here in severe weather situations, But and I know that we worked together in the past about severe weather, but I know that you have the relay system getting into the weather service, but what about providing information to us right here, you know, like you're doing
right now? Basically, all we do is pick up the phone. There is a phone down there. We pick up the phone and do a inter-building call to you guys up here and give you the warnings if we've got a warning.
Yeah.
You know, the first call we make is, of course, the National Weather Service, but the second call we make is to you guys because that's our job, is to warn the public.
Yeah, but technically you can't give a warning, can you?
No, we don't give a warning, but we can tell you what's going on.
Yep, right.
The National Weather Service actually issues the warning.
And that's very important. You had a comment, Dave?
No, I was just concurring with him.
All right. Talking about pandemic drills, let's first of all define the word pandemic, and then what do you guys do in that regard?
Okay. Well, the Tri-County area, I think it's Meeker, Sibley, and McLeod, they kind of bound together. In the event that there's some sort of widespread pandemic, like a disease, the big one that they're pretty much worrying about is the bird flu. So if the bird flu mutates and it's widespread, well, there's rough plans set in place that should an inoculation become available, they'd have to get all the population of these three counties through a facility to get the shots, more or less. So that's a lot of people. Well, basically, our role is to provide backup communications between those three sites in the counties, where they pick up the people, shuttle them down to the immunization location and whatnot.
Do you do practice work on that? I mean, did you set up and actually practice that or do that or what?
Yeah, we did, and it was pretty funny because we actually had a power outage in the south side of
house
during the drill. And they were so amazed because I picked up my radio went dead that I had in front of me, so I picked up my handy talkie, went right over to the window where I could get a clear shot to the repeater, and within 15 seconds we were on the air and had communications reestablished for the entire drill.
Well, one thing, too, I know that you display your wares down at the McLeod County Fair. and maybe other events I'm not aware of. But you guys also have a generator that is at your that you've been given through some what is it?
We were very fortunate.
Nonprofit deal or something like
right,
that.
Right. We are a 501c3 organization, mm-hmm. and we were very fortunate. We got coming to give us a 4,000 watt generator. And we've built a trailer for that generator, and we have mm-hmm. that generator set up with a canopy and a go mm-hmm. kit so that we can actually go at the drop of a hat to some location and provide communications.
Because if you lose power, you know, you're stuck.
Yep, it's over.
You know, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, over to you, Dave. We were going to talk to you about the technical committee. What do you do in that regard?
Okay. Well, when we're deciding what radio equipment to purchase for these locations or what we want to solicit donations for. Basically, the main part the technical committee does, we decide what we want to get. So, you know, if we say at this hospital we want these capabilities, then we sit around and we decide, mm-hmm. well, we need this for radio, this to drive it, and, maybe what kind of cabling and all that type of thing.
So you do kind of suggest what the club needs, or you get together and discuss it
right.
with your committee, I would imagine?
Yep.
Yeah.
So if anyone's got any great ideas, hey, I know of this piece of equipment that would help out, we talk about it and
sure.
perhaps
mm-hmm.
decide to implement that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At present time, we are looking to, what did we figure the cost was on the station set up for the hospital for the digital? We're looking to raise about $2,000 mm-hmm. to get amateur radio equipment and computer equipment to support the Hutchinson Hospital. And we're also going to be doing training there to train hospital personnel as amateur radio operators mm-hmm. to operate the equipment. One of the things the Department of Homeland Security has done is they've set up a system for regional hospitals. But unfortunately, the Hutchinson Hospital is not a regional hospital. So all the equipment that was bought by the Department of Homeland Security goes to Glencoe. But we need to have that same equipment and capability here in Hutchinson.
Okay.
It's a definite dire need. And so we are working very diligently and very hard right now to try and get $2,000 raised to be able to purchase the computers and the radio equipment that we need to set up a station in the Hutchinson Hospital.
What would you do there at the hospital then?
Basically, what we do there is if you have a pandemic emergency
okay.
or a Department of Homeland Security emergency, then we can provide backup communications for the mm-hmm. hospital to the Red Cross, the Salvation Army, Department of Homeland Security.
Why doesn't Homeland Security just, that's great that Glencoe's got that. They are a regional hospital here, but Hutchery Healthcare. You're going to be doing there. We're going to be there working on behalf of Homeland Security,
right?
And they're not going to give you the money for this stuff.
It was the way they decided to do it. It's the federal government, and
yeah,
they decided that the regional hospitals only would get this equipment. And because Hutchinson is not a regional hospital,
mm-hmm.
it goes to the Glencoe Hospital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, 2 minutes to 4 o'clock. Greg Urban and Dave Fisher. Anything else, guys?
Well, I just would encourage anybody that's interested in becoming a ham radio operator to give us a call. Anybody that wants to make a donation, sure mm-hmm. can give me a call. And if you'd like to see what we do, Field Day comes mm-hmm. up on June the 28th this year, and we'll be out at the Hutchinson Airport. And if you want to see what we're doing as far as actual mm-hmm. operations out in the field, we're going to be out there using our generator, and we aren't allowed to use any shore power or any line power.
Mm-hmm.
We have to use all emergency power. It's all set up just like we would set up and operate in an emergency mm-hmm. situation.
And your antennas and everything else.
Everything else.
How about our antenna back here? You have one set up. It's kind of listing off this way a little bit.
Yeah, that one there, we're working on getting a different antenna for that one. That's actually Big Don's R7000.
Yeah, well, it's getting to look, whatever. I won't continue there. All I can say is Big Don, huh?
Yeah, Big Don.
And we love Big Don. All right, thanks for joining us, Greg Urban.
Thank
appreciate
you for having
it.
Us again.
We'll have you back. President of the Crow River Area Radio Amateur Radio Club, and Dave Fisher, Emergency Coordinator with the club. Dave, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. It's going to wrap it up here on KDUZ ABC News here at 4 o'clock.